Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast, and today we will... Whoa! Slow down there. Hey, where's the fire? Am I right? Okay. Why don't you go on back, try that again, and walk this time. There's no need to run. The podcast only just started, and we'll be here for a little while. Yeesh. In any case, I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
That's right. Also with us today is our bright, shining beacon of manhood, and that is super producer Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Z, you knuckleheads. Also with us today is a very special returning guest to Stoop Kids, Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, welcome back, and thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm really excited to be back on the podcast. It's been, I don't know, a couple months since my last appearance, and I was ready for some more Hey Arnold.
And we were very ready to have you back. And if that's an indication of anything, it's that we've got some great discussions in store for us today, starting with the first half of episode 22, which is, of course, called Hall Monitor. Original air date for this episode was January 13th, 1997, and the Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Phoebe becomes Hall Monitor and asks Helga for tips. She becomes overwhelmed by the quote-unquote power, and soon everyone wants the old Phoebe back, even Helga when she realizes Phoebe's also giving her detentions. And as always, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. In a bit of a change of pace today, online it was telling me that Steve Saki was supervising the direction for both 22A and 22B. He also got a co-directing credit for this episode. So shout outs, Steve Saki, and Kelly James, who also co-directed this episode. The lone writing credit for this ep goes to Rachel Lippman. So shout outs all around, and shout out to Emily, who I will be kicking it to in just a few seconds. Emily, what were some of your big takeaways from this episode?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, Cody. I think, so Stoop Kids, we've established ourselves as an anti-authoritarian podcast. So I think I know where all of us are going to go as far as the Hall Monitor slash cop status in this show or in this episode. But yeah, we see Phoebe in a more assertive role. Basically, Helga coaches her into becoming more assertive and taking over for her as Hall Monitor. So kind of just seeing what it's like for a kid to take on this position of authority over other kids, over their own peers, and how difficult and weird that can be, especially for someone who hasn't been in more of an assertive role like this. As Helga notes, like, Phoebe is too soft-spoken or maybe too intellectual to be the Hall Monitor, which is harsh, but I think Phoebe learns a lot through the role Helga kind of forces her into. And but yeah, not a fan of Hall Monitors in general or cops, obviously. All of them in any authoritarian role being a bad one, generally speaking. But yeah, there's a lot going on. It kind of ends in a weird way too, I think. But there are some funnier moments, and like, especially when just the fact that Phoebe gives everyone detention, I think, is really funny. She gives like pretty much every kid in the entire class detention. And I think the part where they show her in the mirror and she transforms into a Helga lookalike with dark hair and like her glasses become rounder, that's like quite a memorable moment of animation in this episode. But yeah, overall, hall monitors, don't feel great about them in general, and feels weird to see Helga kind of forcing Phoebe to act more in this way. But yeah, curious to hear what everyone else has to say about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit on a couple great points that I hope we all get into, including the kind of the ending couplet notes of this episode. But before we get to all that, let's see what Harry has to say. Harry, what'd you think of Hall Monitor Phoebe?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Emily brought up the ending, because that was where some of my criticism lies as well. I think that there is the core of a good idea in this episode. I'm just not sure it totally comes together for me. I really like the idea that, like, Phoebe is a character who was the opposite extreme from Helga, right? So she was a character who was pushed around and kicked around, as Helga tells her in the speech when she's training her to be the hall monitor. And that is, like, the reason why Phoebe course corrected. I would have really liked to have seen a more convincing version of the final scene where everyone realizes that they had been taking Phoebe for granted, and that they really wanted her back genuinely, because the way that that scene plays, it plays more like they're just desperately trying to get out of detention, right? Like, they make these appeals to Phoebe and how they loved her and how they miss the old Phoebe, but they're clearly doing it just to sneak out of detention afterwards. And that made me feel kind of gross, because it made me feel like there wasn't really any justice for Phoebe in this. And it does hurt to see Phoebe act this way, right? And it sort of makes sense given her character and given how she wanted to sort of, like, she had been repressing this need to be angry, but we don't really see a lot of that interiority either, in favor of the comedy, which is good and not a problem, right? It's especially fun to see Phoebe act totally opposite of how she usually has been, and especially a treat to get to hear her voice actress sort of stretch in that way. And I think it's a good Helga episode too, right? Like, I really like the idea that going back to Helga's sort of self-awareness, Helga is actually very aware of how she comes off to people and is, like, she's, like, utilizing that in her role as the hall monitor. And even with Phoebe, she, like, coaches Phoebe. She clearly knows what she's doing as a teacher. And then at the end, she's like, she makes a joke about how Phoebe says, "Oh, I don't want to be this emotionally distressed person." And Helga goes, "Hey, what's so bad about that?" Or, like, something to that effect. And so we get to see a lot of nuance to Helga here, in sort of like a tertiary way that I like. But what I don't like is that I feel like the actual arc of this character and what Phoebe actually learns is sort of underserved by maybe just how fast they had to be with it or conflicting sort of interests or something like that. But that's kind of what I'm thinking.
That's pretty fair. I had a similar feeling while watching that some of, especially kind of the middle act of the episode was, like, weirdly abbreviated, and that kind of did, like, the first act and the third act less justice than maybe I would have liked. So glad you brought that up. Drew, how about you next? What'd you think of this half episode?
As an episode, I think that it does struggle in its execution of the idea. I think I'm with Harry that I really like the idea at the core of this episode, which is, like, what if we saw Phoebe act in a way that's, like, you know, out of character for such a shy and meek character to act, you know, bold and braggadocious, you know, and having Helga be the coach in that way is a great, you know, pairing, right? We've seen them paired together in many episodes, and, you know, it's a common thing that the show likes to do, is to sort of pair them up. It's interesting, Cody, I don't know where you got the description from, the plot description. Where's that from?
It is from, so I get all of them from, it's not like the Hey Arnold Wikipedia page or like the Wikia or whatever it's called. It's just the Wikipedia page for Hey Arnold episodes.
Gotcha. It's just interesting the way that that's characterized in that plot description is, like,
I agree.
I think it's wrong. It's basically saying that, like, Phoebe is asking Helga for advice, like, to coach her, but it's really, like, Helga being a mastermind trying to keep the power, yes, like, in her, like for herself, like, and Phoebe's, like, a pawn in that play. And then, of course, Helga loses control and, you know, this monster I've created kind of thing. So it's interesting to see how someone else watched this episode and didn't quite get that. It was more about Helga orchestrating a plan. I think that this episode also sort of mirrors what you see in the previous episode that I was here for, which was the mugged episode, which is what happens when you, like, gain power that you hadn't had before. This one's interesting in that, like, it's more about like power over your peers, whereas in Mugged, it's like power over, like, physical power over, like, you know, strangers or threats in the wild. But it does have some mirroring there. I think the two bookends that really get me for this episode is that we get a whole segment at the beginning of Helga being hall monitor. And if this was truly a Phoebe episode, which it definitely seems like one, and I think probably is one, but if it was a Phoebe episode, like, why did we need to see the scenes at the beginning with Helga being the hall monitor? I thought that was strange until I realized that I think Helga is like the show's idea of like a good hall monitor, almost. Like, it's almost like you would think that Phoebe would be a better hall monitor because of like her characterization, right? Like, she's more nice, or she's more respectful, or more thoughtful, or more intelligent, where, you know, Helga in real life is not. But they almost sort of show the dark side of what like an analytical personality does with like authoritarian power compared to someone who maybe isn't as intelligent or isn't as cunning or something, you know? So I thought that was really interesting to see, like, are they trying to say that, like, people who are, I don't know, people like Phoebe who gain power are going to abuse it in a different or more sadistic way than, people like Helga? Like, you saw all of the rules and, like, all of the micromanagement of process in the halls when Phoebe was the hall monitor. I think that's what I'm commenting on here. And then the last thing I have to say is a fun one that I still remember this line from childhood, and it, like, when it happened, I was like, oh yeah, and that's the no cuts, no bots, no coconuts. Like, I feel like you can't get through this episode without being like, oh yeah, I remember that episode, that line. Let's see. Oh, and then my other shout out is the band at the back of the auditorium. At the back.
Yeah, very
not
good.
Not on stage, not in the pit. They're like in the back near the door.
Very glad you. There's a lot that I want to comment on, but since you brought up the marching band, this fits in this episode. Bits of it fit into my category of memories of me like being a young person watching the show and thinking like, this is what the real world will be like. It will have like weird expectations that I will carry forth with me to like the next levels of education. For example, the existence of hall monitors, which I don't think I ever had, the existence of inane weekly assemblies addressing those hall monitors, which by default I never had, but then also the presence of marching bands in those assemblies for like recognition of hall monitors at like an elementary school level. Wild stuff going on. I guess getting back to the meat of it, I like this episode a ton, at least conceptually or on paper. I think the best in my mind, like the best sort of parts of it that really sing for me are, and it gets into that relationship that these characters it's kind of us versus Phoebe, the sort of dynamic that you were talking about, Harry, and it should be more of a, you know, like when Phoebe puts on the uniform, she loses her sense of self, which the episode does lean into a little bit, and it's kind of them being like combating the uniform instead of her classmates combating Phoebe directly. But then there is that like positioning of Helga and Phoebe being sort of on opposite poles from one another, and like kind of this background suggestion of like Helga is somebody that Phoebe like wants to be around and like kind of needs in her life, but she doesn't need to be that person. They exist only and like purposefully as sort of complements to one another rather than as one another. I don't know if that's me being up my own, you know what about it, but
that's great. That's like clearly what they're doing right with that last.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's sort of yet another Twin Peaksian ending to a Hey Arnold episode. The only other thing I'll say for now is this is kind of like we've alluded to the past couple weeks. This is the show kind of expanding its borders a little bit, getting new characters into the main focus of episodes. And not to talk too much about episode B of this particular episode. But it's like kind of a more like B or C T character being guided through the narrative by one of the two sort of protagonists of the show. We see a lot of like Helga is animated to be like very genuine and sincere in her moments alone with Phoebe. I remember one specific, like she's sitting down with Phoebe near the beginning of the episode, and for all like the shenanigans that Helga gets up to, she has like that like sad, like her brow is in like a very sad position that like, I don't know if we've ever seen in her in an episode up to now. That just really struck me in a certain way. So there's like aesthetically and thematically, there were nice little nuggets, I think, to take from this episode, along with the ones that we sort of already touched on.
Yeah. I think that something that all three of you are sort of unlocking for me in this episode is that, and we've talked about this before, it's sort of an episode that's ambition outstrips its reach. And I also think that maybe more damningly, it's an episode where like the fundamental idea of Hey Arnold, that we're going to slot characters into roles so that we can sort of enhance or explore the nuance of those roles, is actually underserved here, right? Because like, Drew, you had said that that they wanted to depict Helga as a good hall monitor. I think not necessarily good, but certainly like a traditional hall monitor, right? And I think that that's supposed to set up the sort of juxtaposition. And to Emily's point, that actually it creates like a good anti-authoritarian message, right? Which is that like the system of hall monitoring and the fact that it's passed down from hall monitor to hall monitor, and the fact that it's one peer being given detention rights over other peers, all of that, those are bad systems that will produce authoritarianism, right? Like that is an episode thesis. However, it's complicated and not in the usual good way by making Phoebe the subject here, because that makes it start to look like this is something Phoebe had to learn and wanted to learn from Helga, right? Where like Helga thinks she's doing a good thing for Phoebe, right? And she's teaching Phoebe to stand up for herself, and she's teaching Phoebe to be assertive. And then it backfires through the hall monitor authoritarianism that she has, because she over course corrects, kind of the same way that Helga over course corrects, and for the same reasons, right? Is that Helga feels like she is underappreciated, and so she becomes this bully, and Phoebe is even more unappreciated, so she becomes more of sort of a terror bully. And that's what, at the end of the episode, that Helga transformation thing is. But the problem with that is that like, what, so is the answer that Phoebe should not stand up for herself then? Because like, there is an imbalance that is portrayed at the beginning of this episode, right? Where like, Phoebe gets pushed down and her glasses get stepped on by a first grader while she's wearing them, right? Like all of that happens, it's played for laughs. But like, is the idea that somehow Phoebe is like fundamentally a meek character who must remain meek and doesn't have anything to learn from Helga and should just be a compliment to Helga's side? Because that is not a message that works for me, right? Like, I would much rather have seen these characters like come to appreciate Phoebe genuinely, and then Phoebe learn to stand up for herself a little bit, which is like implied by the Twin Peaksian ending, as you called it, Cody. But like, even that ending is supposed to be sort of sinister rather than a good thing, right? Like when Phoebe puts the hat back on for a second and she says, "Yo, halt," the way she had been, it's sort of a scary, like, oh no, like the hall monitor Phoebe is still in there, and not in a good way, which is what I guess I would have liked to have seen, right? And like that, even if that had been pulled off, that is itself another weird sort of trap, right? Because as Emily referred to, like the idea of hall monitors in the first place is gross, right? And like Helga acting like a big braggadocious hall monitor in the beginning is gross. So we're left in this weird place where the episode can't really win, right? Because if Phoebe learns to stick up for herself, she does it through this sort of authoritarian lens. And if she doesn't learn to stick up for herself, then we have to be comfortable with Phoebe just fundamentally being a weak person who gets pushed around. And neither of those are the conclusions that I want to end up at, right? And so like, I think that there's something in the formula here that isn't working. It's like the inherent evils of being a hall monitor, or it's Phoebe's character, or it's Helga's influence on Phoebe's character and where they end up. But they're, for me, they're not able to square the circle here, I don't think.
I'm on board with that. And the more you kind of characterize that, the more I feel like I'm just ultimately going to be reaffirming what you said and maybe characterizing it as a slightly different way in a way that I do, which is like, we're talking like, I like thinking about episode structure and like, if we're looking at the numbers, we have 11 minutes to tell the story. And like it initially was sort of planted in my head when Drew was talking about like, why do we really need to, like, why do we need to see Helga at the beginning of this episode being the hall monitor? Like, not only does that muddy certain threads for later, but it also eats up, you know, like 8 to 10% of the episode that could be used to, like, I don't know, harvest Phoebe's interiority and kind of flesh it out a little bit more. And like, we could have taken that time to stick to a few of these threads instead of trying to like overreach and maybe like try to, I don't know, answer every single question that we asked, which just kept being more and more. I don't think I have any firm conclusions, but I there is a certain like muddiness to this, and we've seen it kind of recently as well, as the scale of thematic scale of these episodes kind of balloons a little bit. And it's sort of like the ambition is endearing or impressive, even though the execution is maybe not what any of us were really looking for or wanting in the year 2021, anti-authoritarian podcast, etc. So that aligns with me.
Drew and I were both thinking of, while we were watching this, the Stanford Prison Experiment, which I won't fully describe, but if you've taken a psychology class, you've probably heard of it. And basically, it was an unethical social psych experiment back in the day, and the like conclusions that came out of it were that if someone is put in a position of authority, like they become consumed by that authority and that power, regardless of like whether they know it's ethically questionable or wrong, like regardless of any of that, they like just take on this monster level of power, in a bad way. And yeah, Drew, I don't know if you wanted to mention something else about it, but just thinking of how that relates to Phoebe being put in this position and like forced into this position of authority.
Yeah. It's just like a comment on, it doesn't matter who you are or like how you feel necessarily beforehand. It's just like, being given the uniform, right, being put in that role, like fundamentally changes like the way that your brain works, and like within some certain amount of time, like you're gonna abuse that power. Like it's almost like absolute, right? Like it's almost going to happen regardless of like your like the ethics before you, because of like the circumstances. Like that's sort of what that experiment was about. Again, I don't know if I can comment on the validity of it, but like I couldn't help but like think of that specific experiment when we were watching that. So
yeah, that's a really great point. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, where like the Stanford Prison Experiment plotline or like theme is a totally valid anti-authoritarian takeaway, right? Because like basically what you're saying is that like the Stanford Prison Experiment, it's like it turns out that systems whereby people are given authority to dehumanize others, it will produce inequality and suffering. That's kind of the idea. That's so complicated in a bad way by the introduction of Phoebe and Helga's dynamic. And something that you said, Drew, that made me think about this more, is that you're right that Helga is clearly the mastermind in this situation and is puppeteering Phoebe with this regime change, basically.
Yeah. Helga is Obama and Phoebe is Joe Biden. Like, it's...
like that's a really good point, particularly because that is absolutely their relationship, right? Like we've seen that's established, is that Phoebe is kind of the sidekick that does what Helga wants her to and is shaped by what Helga says. And that is itself it's a frustrating element of this episode, right? Because like the episode doesn't comment on how that's a problem, except that Phoebe sees herself as Helga and has to back away from that, but she doesn't come into her own in any way, right? Like they gesture at this idea that the problem was that Phoebe was letting Helga control her, and they gesture at the problem that it's an authoritarian issue in the first place, and then they gesture at the problem that Phoebe was underappreciated, and that's why she reacted so strongly the way she did. So like, I guess it's good in one way, right? Because it's complicated, like, and nuanced, but at the same time, they don't point to an actual sort of like satisfying conclusion. Instead, they kind of try to do three different things at once, at least, and they don't really manage any of them, I think.
I think you're right. Sorry, Jude, did you want to jump on any of that?
I just feel like there's like some like important things that we haven't like talked about, like specifically like the reappearance of that guy who you guys say Peapod Kid?
Peapod Kid, yeah.
Like that's like a really important part of this episode. like the fact that this character returns.
What? Say more about that.
Get into it.
What? You saw the guy? You saw him? You heard him? What more needs to be said?
True.
Yeah, fair point.
I just want to be validated. Like that was one of the most important parts of the episode, and we're not talking about it.
A Peapod Kid impression to bust out. Can everybody give me their best Peapod Kid impression?
Oh man, now I have to, like, in my mind I have to remember what he sounded like. I know it was weird and funny.
Does he go something along the lines of like, "Oh, well, I thought we were legumes." Is that like too? That's too much of something. I don't think I quite got there.
You didn't quite get there, but I liked it, and it was the thing that I thought you were going to do, which is that you busted out.
It's like some Yogi Bear.
Well, I was
Yogi say, Bear,
Florence, but that's all right.
Hey, Boo Boo, what are we, legumes?
I think he does have a stammer, right? And he sounds very intellectual, so it's like
oh yeah, there you go.
I was on my way to a algebra class. That's not nearly it either, so I didn't do any better.
I mean, it's a fake Gerald voice, and that's like I'm trying to like overreach a little. Just I don't like on a different podcast, Harry, you did an impression of somebody by like doing a person pretending to do that voice, which just like I think unlocked all of voice acting for me. So I think I need to take cues from you.
Yeah, that's how you gotta do it. You gotta try to act like you're acting like somebody else, acting like somebody else. Do you know what I mean, Sparky?
Oh boy. Okay. Well, we're talking about this episode of Hey Arnold concluding in a less than satisfying way. Hopefully, Emily can bring us back to levels of satisfaction here.
I'm just thinking about how the administration like forces the kids into this position.
Yeah.
Which is I'm thinking of the parallel between like a city enforcing, you know, hiring police to enforce all the laws on the street. It's a similar thing that the administration does. And they're putting the kids in this terrible position to like rule over their peers, tell on each other, like tattle, you know, snitch, just be aggravating and not cooperative with each other, but rather just in this authoritarian position that is gross and harmful to everyone.
I'm living for this black flag, Emily, that we're seeing on this episode. I'm all about it.
And I also am wondering if y'all have ever been the hall monitor or had that, because I feel like the hall monitor in general, unless one of y'all can prove me wrong here,
fake.
Is like
100% fake.
Yeah, it's like a thing that's just in TV, right?
Yeah,
in cartoons.
Fake. Absolutely.
Or was it in like the writers' era, like the generation ahead of us who wrote the episodes? Like, was it a part of their elementary or middle school culture? Like, I don't know. It does seem like just a TV trope, though.
I the more we engage with the show, the more I think that is one of like the many tropes that this show and other TV shows have helped perpetuate over the years. The closest that my elementary school had, and this is like not nearly in the same ballpark, but it was like safety patrol people. Like you could sign up to like help with crosswalks in the morning or like at lunchtime or after school or whatever. I remember I signed up for one of those once, and they must have saw something in me or didn't see something in me that I didn't or did see, because I never actually got the opportunity to do it. And that jokerfied me forever. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe y'all had different experiences, but yeah, I ain't heard no hall monitors in my neck of the woods.
I think hall monitor is like one of those conspiracies that like everyone just sort of pretends like it's part of like experience. Like, you know, those magic eyes where like you look through the image and it's a 3D dolphin. And it's like, no, like that's just a fake. Like everyone who sees it is like in on the joke.
No, I'm pretty sure those are real, Drew. I always see the dolphins.
I saw those dolphins. Yeah.
I'm sure you do. This is my theory. That's a conspiracy. I know that's not related to this episode, but the truth is out there and Magic Eye is fake.
I don't know. I think we'll have to talk about this. I have always seen the dolphin. I know that everyone I know has always seen the dolphin. It sounds like it might just be you.
Are there any final dolphins and or shout outs that you goofballs would like to throw into the ether before we wrap this one up?
I have some shout outs on this one. The fact that Eugene makes this like very pained expression when Helga's on stage for her last day of being a hall monitor. I've never seen that look on his face. I know, Cody, you shouted out Helga's sad look earlier, but I've never seen that look on Eugene's face. He's like has his teeth clenched and he looks so pained. It made me laugh. He's just struggling to get through the assembly, as I can relate to that as a kid, or could relate. And then I want to shout out the wavy water lines that are happening in the animation of the bubbler, like the water fountain. I have to say bubbler because I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but
you're obligated to do that. We understand.
Yeah. But yeah, I just like that animation style. Love to see the wavy lines.
Yeah, that's great. I think that I have two shout outs. The first one is just to the girls, I guess. I really love that this episode is about our two sort of like two of our biggest girl characters, and the fact that like we get to see them on screen interacting with one another. There's a really good scene where Helga's trying to teach Phoebe to stand up for herself. That's like pretty rare, right? Like you don't really think about it because I think this show is pretty good at sort of like managing gendered characters and everything. Like Helga is arguably the main character of the show, but there is something really nice and refreshing about seeing an episode where like Arnold and Gerald, but it's just two female friends. I think that's rad. And then the other one is super weird, which is why did all those kids want to be the hall monitor so bad in the auditorium? That doesn't make any sense. Like Helga's picking hall monitor and everybody's like, ooh, pick me. It's like, what? Why would that be a desirable thing for you? Can anybody fill me in?
Shaded all of them.
Yeah, it's a school full of cops.
That admittedly gets into my final shout out, which is cops. And with that being said, I think that about does it for this half of the episode. As we collectively ponder the monsters that we ourselves have created through our instances of intense obsession and mania, I will just gently remind, or rather recommend you to not touch that dial, because we've got a whole other half of this episode to dig into, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. I hope y'all are ready to ascend to the next stage of your lives, because we've got episode 22B to dig into today, right now specifically, and that episode is, of course, known as Harold's Bar Mitzvah. Original air date January 13th, 1997. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Harold runs away from his bar mitzvah, thinking he will retain his childhood this way. That's it. Also shouting out up top, yet another very, very important, beautiful, beloved guest star for this episode. We've got Elliot Gould, co-starring as Rabbi Goldberg. You love to see it and hear it. Give us more of this Craig Bartlett. Shouting out the other fine folks who made this episode possible. We've got Steve Saki, again, apparently credited as the supervising director for episode 22. Go get it, Steve. Co-directors for this episode are Julie Murphy Hashiguchi and Dan Povenmire. And co-writing credits, we actually have a writing credit for Joseph Purdy for this episode, and then a separate story credit for Peter Burns. So shout-outs all around. I will kick it over to Harry now. Harry, what'd you think of this bar mitzvah, huh?
Hey, thanks. This is a really memorable episode in that, it's almost a very special episode, right, in introducing Judaism or Jewish concepts to television, which I think is not something to be sort of, overlooked lightly. I think it's really cool that it does that, right, and it's really cool that it characterizes Harold in that way, and it is really, really cool that they got Elliot Gould for it. I think that it's also a bit awkward, right, because it's, Drew commented on this and then I couldn't sort of see it, but it's an absurdly truncated episode for 12 minutes or whatever. They do a whole Jewish parable thing where Harold ends up embodying the three concepts, righteousness, charity, and prayer that a bar mitzvah boy, a man of duty, has to embody in order to come of age. And they do it, but in order to do that, and particularly in order to do that after having a very protracted introduction to what a bar mitzvah is, voiced by Elliot Gould earlier in the episode, they get like literally a minute for each one of those things, and the way that they have to do it, it feels so fast that it's almost like comical in a way that makes me feel kind of bad, right? Because like I want this to be like a special episode. It deserves that space, and it deserves to be I hate to make this comparison, right? But it kind of deserves a Hey Arnold Christmas treatment, right? You would think, but instead we get this this extremely brusque sort of adaptation, and it feels a little bit like it's not doing justice to what it's setting out to do. I'm not accusing them of that, right? I'm just saying that I feel like if you were going to do something this ambitious, where you were going to be this is an episode that introduces people to Judaism the way it did for me, for instance, right? Then you should I'd probably give it some space, especially if you've got Elliot Gould, right? I don't know. So it's an episode I like. It's an episode that's memorable, but I think it's an episode that, especially on reflection, probably deserved a little bit more than it got.
Honestly, pretty awesome criticism for your episode. If it's you know what, the worst part of it is we just needed more of it. But I definitely get the energy you mean. I would have loved to have see this in sort of a double episode structure. Be that as it may, I'm curious to hear what Emily thought about this episode. Emily?
Yeah, I think this is an excellent episode. I can understand where Harry's coming from, but I think they tackle a lot with Harold's character in such a short time, and just seeing him unsure of whether or not he can handle the responsibility that's he's being faced with by the rabbi and his bar mitzvah, and the fact that he just is in each of these quick moments able to do it and proves himself wrong through all of that, that he is righteous and charitable and can do his prayers. I just think, I don't know, I really like all of that. I think it's interesting and fun to see that in that way. And it makes it funny too, or the episode is funny for how they take on Harold's quirks too. I mean, he's just interested in the presents that he can get and the grape juice that'll be at his bar mitzvah. And at the end, he even confesses to Arnold that, you know, even though Arnold's trying to tell him that he, proved himself wrong and does have all of these qualifications for his bar mitzvah, he just couldn't get on the canoe. He was too young to actually get on the Elk Island canoe. So I don't know. I think it's funny, and I think the pacing of it makes it I don't know, just interesting. They just tackle it in a short time, but I can see why Harry would want it to be a longer, full length, double A and B. But yeah, it's a great episode. I also really like the music in it. There's some nice, strings and violin going on when Harold and Arnold are at the Elk Island boat, and the camera fades on Harold alone in the boat, and just some other great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of great stuff. The kind of one time minimum per episode shout out to Jim Lang for all the fantastic work on the show. It is legendary, to say the least. Now, Drew, I'm under the impression that you have a lot to say about this episode, and so I think you should just get it all out there.
I don't know if I have a lot to say, more so than I just have a lot to I don't know, like discuss, like maybe bring up some stuff. So I think the first thing I should probably mention is that, like, I don't know, I'm Jewish. I'm like not like religious, but I come from a Jewish family. And as a child, I had a bar mitzvah. So I have some personal experience here that is relevant to this episode. I think overall, like, it's a good episode, right? Like, it's for kids. Like, the majority of children watching this were probably, you know, some brand of Christian. That's likely, right? And so, like, this is a good introduction to, like, some concepts that are, like, different, like, and how it may be, like, it's not that different from, like, their religious practice, right? Like, they just, right, they're trying to show some diversity. And I think Nickelodeon had, like, a thing about this in the 90s or early 2000s with the Rugrats also doing, like, a Passover episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, there was some Jewish representation by Nickelodeon back in the day, and I think that's good. Like, that's overall good. There's just, like, a lot of really funny things that they decided to do in this episode. Like, they focused a lot on, like, on exposition, right? Like, explaining what a bar mitzvah is and what
it's like fully
mean.
Half of the episode.
Yeah, and they do it in a weird way, right? Like, they don't have a real Watson, right? Like, they need, like, Arnold or someone who's not Jewish to, like, be there and, like, be explained to. Instead, we have the rabbi explaining it to Harold and, like, doing live translation, being like, and you need to do your mitzvah, good deeds. Like it's so strange to, like, see the rabbi explaining, like, what the words mean in real time to, like, nobody, right? That was the first strange thing I saw. It would have been great to, like, get another character in there to help with that explanation, make it seem a little less awkward. But, like, that being said, like, they went over some of the same anxieties that I had as someone who needed to get bar mitzvahs. Like, everything that you prepare is in a different language, a language that is not even written in, like, the traditional, whatever, Latin alphabet. I don't even know. You know, like, how Spanish and French and stuff all have the same letters. And it's, you know, it's written differently. And not only that, but, like, it's all, like, chanted and tonal, right? So, like, everything is, like, coupled together. And also in the actual book, there's no vowels, right? So you have to memorize the vowel placements too. So, like, there's just, like, a lot to memorize. And the Torah portion that Harold did was, like, maybe, like, I don't know, like, 1/1000th of a Torah portion, if not less. So it's just, like, there's a lot of pressure to, like, memorize this and then perform it, right? Like, it was a performance in front of the entire, like, this is not the right word, but clergy, right? Like, the entire people at the synagogue, not just your family, but, like, you perform in front of everyone who comes to worship that weekend. And so it's a lot of pressure. And I really like what they did with there's this scene where they do a metaphor where the bucket of water that Harold is carrying gets bigger and bigger as he realizes the different responsibilities and the different expectations that are being put on him. And so I think that that's really the crux of the episode, is, like, the idea of responsibility. And it's interesting that, again, that the description of this episode says more about how he's worried about losing his childhood. And I really don't think that this episode has anything to do with that at all. And it's more about, like, the responsibility and, like, the pressures that he gets from other people when it comes to those expectations, right? Like, he, part of the reason that it's bad, or he's feeling bad that he doesn't go to his bar mitzvah, is that he's disappointing people. And disappointment is, like, a huge lesson to learn in life about how responsibility works, right? There might not be direct consequences in your life, but you might disappoint other people. And, like, being able to be there and support other people in what they need to be fulfilled, whether that's physically or emotionally or whatever, like, that's part of the lessons learned here in this episode. And I think that, like, that's sort of why there is validity to my experience of having to go through this mostly pointless, when it comes down to it, like, ritualistic memorization process, right? Like, that's what it comes down to, right? Like, 'cause I don't personally believe in any of the cultural or the religious impacts of these rituals that I went through. But I do think that there might be some sort of benefit to, like, the rigor that you had to prove to yourself that you could stand up through.
Wow. Yeah. A lot of great stuff. I don't really know what I could say that Drew didn't already say, or characterized pretty darn well. I guess my two cents, this is an episode I didn't realize how, I didn't realize how much I like internalized this episode until I watched it again. There are a lot of moments that like really came back to just like not necessarily long scenes, but just like remarks and like the way Harold says certain things. I think even when I was younger, there was a part of me that was that felt thankful that some like I was seeing something like this because I was raised on Roman Catholicism and like it was interesting and like insightful in its own way, despite you know, rewatching it now, seeing how imperfect a lot of that is and how consolidated and kind of condensed a lot of those explanations are, and getting that context from Drew, from his experiences, is invaluable. But it's still, you know, the show taking an episode to even imperfectly just to kind of shed a light on a lot of things that a lot of their viewers probably don't understand, but maybe provide the first couple like stepping stones to comprehending, or at least just like something to kind of kick around in their heads, is something that I really like the show for doing. I also like that Drew brought up like Harold's dream sequence, that sort of water bucket. We've talked about the show's focus on like that focus on fantasies and daydreams and nightmares and things like that, and getting a glimpse of that through Harold and his interiority. Maybe kind of, even if the show doesn't capture the, like the procedural components of this type of ceremony, but like it capturing a lot of those anxieties and that kind of mood. And I guess like thinking about like when I don't know, I'm sort of a relapsed Roman Catholic, but like the sort of anxieties of like getting to a point in a faith that you're kind of, touring through, there is a certain stress to that and a certain like weight and responsibility. And that was I really liked the dream sequence, for existing in this episode. That was like a nice kind of not inciting incident, but nice kick in the pants for Harold to kind of get him going on his journey. Yeah, man. I don't know. The only other thing I'll note is that longtime listeners will know the sort of inconsistency with the Wikipedia sanctioned episode summaries. I really like putting that on their shoulders. I don't know. They're amusing sometimes. They can be annoying other times. I think we're probably 0-2 today, but you know what? That's fine. We're having fun, right?
We certainly are, Cody. Thank you. I wanted to sort of walk back some of my criticisms, because I think that Emily, you in particular, made a lot of really good points. And then Drew, the way that you talked about the metaphor and the way that you talked about that early exposition scene, it actually kind of made it pop for me in a way that I hadn't realized before, which is that you characterized what Harold is nervous about really well, in that you said that it's like it is the ritualism and the like the esotericism of the bar mitzvah sort of like process, right? Like he's afraid that he won't have it memorized. He doesn't understand the chanting. He's like afraid that he doesn't understand what it means to be a good man and to be a good person, right? And that's why he's like afraid of the responsibility, is that he's like, I'm not ready for this, because to him it looks like something that is distant and frightening. And therefore the second part of this, where he goes out and he embodies righteousness, charity, and prayer in these very real world, understandable, parsable contexts, and they help him understand that he possesses those qualities. That's like a really beautiful thing, right? Like it's amazing that the show could demonstrate that in such a parsable way for kids, where it's like they are saying something very concrete and very real about like the theme of religion and the theme of what it means to be a good person, which is basically that like all of the ritual in the bar mitzvah, it's like it's preparing you in the sense that it's teaching you how to apply these concepts to your life that make a good person, right? And so like these tenets are basically ways of living. And I think that's very special. And I also think that this episode is legitimately a really good example of like the sort of early representation in media, right? Where I remember even as a kid, as like a 9-year-old or whatever, when I was watching this, like having Jewish friends and thinking like, I'm glad that I get to see this so I can understand this better. And like understanding that like what Hey Arnold was saying is that like, oh, these are things that are worth talking about and worth learning about. Like the Christmas episode with Mr. Nguyen and the Vietnam War was something that was like worth talking about, right? So like that plays, like that is definitely there. I'm frustrated by the fact that like this is an episode that is attempting so much, and like because it's a 12-minute show, they have the dream sequence and they have the extended monologue by Elliot Gould, and then they have the unbelievably truncated practical application, and it's just like, I get what they're doing, but it's like listening to a podcast at like 300% speed, right? And I wish that we had more time to sit with it.
Yeah, did any of you go to a friend's bar mitzvah? Like I had friends that I invited to mine, so they had that experience. Maybe I was their only friend whose bar mitzvah they went to. But like, is that an experience that any of you had? Did any of you go to someone's bar mitzvah, like the Jewish kid at your school or whatever?
I've seen a serious man a handful of times. Beyond that, I mean, my friends were either like Roman Catholic or yeah. kind of under that like umbrella, or one of the, like the number of adjacent sub umbrellas, because I'm blanking out on how religions are sort of organized. But no, I cannot say that I've attended one, unfortunately.
I went to one in middle school, I believe, which
yeah.
is funny because I was in Catholic middle school. So that was more of a introduction to me, to the Jewish faith to me as a kid, having just otherwise been stuck in Catholic church and Catholic school.
Did you go, can I ask, did you go to like the service part or just to like the after party?
I'm pretty sure it was just like the after party
yeah.
where like more of us were invited to have punch and snacks and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think most of the people that the friends that I invited like only, yeah, came to the after party as opposed to like the service part. It's just interesting. I think my view is skewed, like because I had a bar mitzvah and then I have friends that I invited to mine. Like for some reason, I think the percentage of people that I imagine went to a bar mitzvah of a friend in middle school, like I imagine that that's pretty high, but it's probably not.
Yeah. I mean, I had Jewish friends when they were too young to be bar mitzvahed. And then I didn't have Jewish friends when we were at that age. And so I missed my opportunity, which I'm frustrated.
And you'll never get to go. You'll never get to be a child at a bar mitzvah.
It's messed up.
That is messed up.
Drew, I noticed I like that you mentioned the Nickelodeon representation with the Jewish faith in Rugrats, because I was going to mention that too. So the Rugrats Passover episode, I know it was like a huge deal.
Rugrats Passover is like a way better like execution, I think, than this episode.
Yeah.
But
it's more of like a full special. So kind of Harry's criticism to this one being yeah. the half, but
they had much more time. You're right.
Yeah. But this was the success of like the Rugrats Passover. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia. It said it was one of the first animated series to ever focus on a Jewish holiday, and the success led them to create the Rugrats Hanukkah special, which also received critical acclaim. They like won awards for these, and yeah, it was like Nickelodeon was one of the first to introduce.
It rocks. I don't know why it rocks, but it just does.
To Judaism. Yeah, it's so cool. And then also these Rugrats specials came first. They aired in the Rugrats Passover aired in 95 and Rugrats Hanukkah aired in 96. And then this episode we're discussing, Harold's Bar Mitzvah, Hey Arnold, came out the following year, 97. So clearly inspired this episode, I think. And especially given the fact that a lot of the writers on Rugrats, namely Rachel Lippman and Steve Saki, I believe, were a part of Rugrats, and Craig Bartlett as well as a part of it. So I feel like all of that definitely inspired this particular episode, and just like them wanting to get into Harold's faith and everything. But also the fact that his nightmare sequence too is like a flashback to him being back in the, you know, the olden times. I don't know if he's supposed to be in Israel there, but
indistinct old Jewish times.
Like that's a major plot point in the Rugrats Passover, because they're all telling the Passover story as if they are, you know, Moses, and as if they're there. So that I was noting that was like a definite similarity between the two shows. So it's kind of cool to see just like what would have inspired this one.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really like that you brought up the dream sequence again. This is something that Drew and I talk about ad nauseum, but like there's something to the formality of this episode's construction that is really pleasing to me, where like it's an episode about Harold learning that this religion that he's been brought up in is not so distant from his life and his existing morality as he thought it was, and that he actually can be a part of it, and it can be a part of his life in ways that he can understand and utilize. And like, this is an episode that's doing the same thing, right? Like, this is an episode that is also showing you, the viewer, that Judaism is not distant, that it's something that does like dictate how other people that you know and love live their lives, and that it's something that you can understand, and that it's something that that is parsable, right? And so like the fears that Drew, you alluded to, like your actual fears of having a bar mitzvah are like the fears that they're evoking here, and they also have something to say about that, and they're using this this medium to do that by putting it in something that we are familiar with, right? Hey Arnold, and these characters, like Harold is a character we know, and like these are struggles that we can see. Like there's a really good sort of formal agreement in what it's doing and how it's doing it that I really appreciate.
Yeah, I just like that it's talking more about like the anxieties of disappointing those who like are expectant of you more than anything. And like maybe that's me projecting the fears that and anxieties I had during the time of my bar mitzvah, but like the amount of hours and energy and money that my parents must have spent getting me trained to memorize and perform, you know, this ritual, like, you know, I can't imagine how disappointing it would be if, you know, you messed up. And I think that's like the jug of water that Harold is holding, not necessarily anything physical that might go wrong, but instead just like the emotional baggage of the expectations of others. On a semi-related note, we were talking about other series that did like a Jewish thing, like Rugrats. And for some reason, I remembered that the character Binky from Arthur is basically the same character as Harold from Hey Arnold. Yep. And then I found myself Googling while you guys were talking, is Binky Jewish? And no, he's not Jewish. He's not Jewish, unfortunately. They're not that
similar. Do you know what religion he ascribes to?
I didn't find out, but I did find out that Francine is Jewish.
Is Jewish. Yes, that's right. I remember that.
Just a side note. Arthur was also on the Jewish train.
All aboard. Choo-choo. I guess while we're on the note of shouting out other media, I would like to, they're not paying this podcast. They could if they find this and wanted to. The movie Shiva Baby, which has been, it was kind of a hot movie. Like it was pretty popular. I think more of a couple months ago, obviously not about a bar mitzvah, as you could probably tell from the title. But there's a lot that, the movie kind of brings to the table on top of being a movie that sort of, it's coming from the mouthpiece of a Jewish filmmaker. And it feels to me, there's a lot of care put into like the procedural components of that. And perhaps like, not necessarily the same sorts of anxieties, but there are a lot of kind of clashing anxieties that I won't get into, because people should watch it, because it's a really beautiful, stressful, great movie. And yeah, I don't know. Good stuff. But I don't know. Are there other works of media? Works of media? Are there any other works of media that people would like to shout out? Or are there any other non-media related shout outs that people would like to offer here, kind of as we tie a bow on this one?
I like the movie The Long Goodbye a whole lot. It stars our man Elliot Gould.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, it does.
So check that out. Elliot Gould's great in this episode, as he always is. And he is also a very famous Jewish film star, obviously.
Harry, I know you also mentioned A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah,
that was
that's a fantastic movie about Judaism that you should check out.
I want to comment on the challah in this move in this episode. The bread that they eat, it's while they're in the rabbi's office at the beginning. If you were weirded out by how sticky and goopy that was, like that was a very poor depiction of challah. It's much better than that. Please go try it. It's not like that.
Drew, you also mentioned that the sort of pivotal big line at the end of this episode is kind of funny in an ironic way to make it sort of more palatable to perhaps non-Jewish audience. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Oh yeah, they're like, you gotta have faith or something. I don't know. They use the word faith, and like maybe this is just my Jewish experience, right? I don't speak for every Jew, but like that's not really like a Jewish concept for like faith. Like that's very that's like a Christian worldview kind of concept. And yeah, like you could probably map that same word onto different words in other, you know, cultures and religions, and it basically be the same thing. And so like, I see what they were doing, but like, it was very funny that they like used that as like a big moment for Hale, like busting through the doors, like basically, you know, kicking down the doors saying like, boom, I'm here and I got faith. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess.
Well, I have faith that we did this episode of Hey Arnold justice, and I applaud everybody here. I won't actually applaud, but I'm applauding you in my heart and my soul. Thank you, everyone. And Drew, thank you so much again for joining us today, your second time on the podcast. If you could remind us, where can people find you out in the world or online, and or do you have anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a person that does some stuff on the internet and does some stuff in real life. If you want to see me in real life, I sometimes perform improvised comedy in the Twin Cities. It's been a pandemic, so not recently, but I guess it's starting up again. You might see me there. If you're looking for internet stuff that I do, I make mashups. You can find me on YouTube at Ash Coolbro. I guess I have a Twitter too, but that's just me posting links to YouTube. So probably just go to YouTube.
Shout outs to YouTube. Thank you so much again, Drew. And thank you, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mackin. You can find me on Twitter at Chitaki Harry.
I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Great job, everyone. All right. Can we eat now?